All right, guys, welcome back, EYL. We have a very, very exciting special episode today. First and foremost, shout out to DR.
Dominican.
I didn't even tell you, but a couple months ago, we were number two on the DR charts for business podcasts. We have a strong following in DR. And some of our biggest guests have been Dominican. We had Caesar, DJ Envy's partner. Shout out to Caesar. We had Lord of the Slums,
Fernando.
Caesar's best friend. Shout out to Fernando.
And this is the other guy from Harlem.
John Henry. Shout out to John Henry. So you're in good hands. So today we got Chef Calvin Fernandez. So I'll do the rundown. He is legend within his own right.
Yeah, prodigy, right? Man.
Prodigy, legend, whatever you want to call it. He has cooked for the New York Yankees. He is personal chef to J-Lo and A-Rod?
Yes, sir.
Personal chef to J-Lo and A-Rod. He made Forbes 30 under 30 for chef list. Yep. He's been on TV network, on Chop, on Man vs. Chow, Bobby Flay.
Yeah.
He actually defeated Bobby Flay.
Beat him.
Twice.
We're going to get into that.
he defeated Bobby Flay twice. He's partner chef in Last Lap, which is his restaurant that he's a partner in right now. And he was formerly the chef at La Marina.
Oh my gosh.
La Marina.
A whole vibe, an entire vibe, at the height of it.
At the peak.
We got to talk about that.
I feel like I got to walk around with you on a regular basis.
Put up La Marina on a yacht.
So first and foremost, thank you. Thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
I'm happy to be here. It's an honor. Shout out to you guys for doing what you're doing. I got goosebumps when you were telling me what you guys were doing in DC because I didn't know about that. So I'm happy and proud of you guys because you're always leveling up. So
appreciate it, bro.
On to bigger and better things on a regular basis.
Yeah, welcome to the green room.
Thanks for being here. Thanks for having me.
So the thing with Earn Your Leisure is that we it's really cool because it's a business podcast, but it gives us broad range because everything is a business. Like literally everything is a business because you're making money in it. And one of the things that especially like for just everybody has to eat. Right, and everybody like it's
literally and figuratively.
You saying that is one of the biggest reasons why I started this. Just getting into this business, I knew three things: I'll always be with friends, I'll never go hungry, and I'll always have a job. Because we need food to survive.
That's it.
All facts.
You need food to live. That's a fact. That's a fact. And it's like a lot of times. So we've interviewed restaurant owner before, but we haven't interviewed a chef.
Yeah,
it's a different dynamic, and a lot of times people. It's one of those things where people love to cook a lot of times, right? But a lot of times people don't think about how can they monetize it? How can they make a career out of it?
How
can they make a business out of it?
Yeah.
But you've done all of that and you're still leveling it up. And so it's an interesting conversation because I feel like these are conversations that we can have where anybody, you know, could apply skills that they have and become a chef, right? It's not something that you have to, like, a lot of times, like, we talk about, like, hedge funds and stuff like that, and people get, like, oh, this is over my head. Cooking is not over anybody's head. Right. Like,
you got a bag of chips in your cupboard. You got some jalapenos.
You sound like you're doing a chop basket right now.
There it is. You got a chop basket.
Grab whatever's in the refrigerator.
Whatever you got. Step it up.
So you're a world-class chef, but you come from humble beginnings, but your family is a long line of chefs, cooks, things of that nature, right?
Especially being Dominican, you come from a line of women that know how to cook. You know, I think what's always nostalgic for me, I can be out the country for 3 months. The first thing I need is a home cooked meal for my mom. And it's one of those things where I remember and I think about it. And when I'm creating a new dish, it's always like, how can I make this nostalgic for someone else? You know, so just like you said, with food, there's so many different outlets that you can go to creating a business. And reality is you think about how many people have started a business in their own home and how they've grown to a small little commercial and then buying the store next door. And those are some of my favorite stories, you know, people that start small and even I started a company at one point when I was doing meal preps and we literally rented out an apartment and just made that our kitchen. Like there was no other furniture. We had refrigerators in there. We had shelving in there. We had two ovens and that electric bill was high. But at the end of the day, we were doing the job.
Yeah. So you said you came home to a home cooked meal from your mom, but your dad is actually the chef.
My dad is the chef, you know, and especially being a Latino, you always think about the women are the cooks, you know, and if you think about restaurants, 90% of the cooks are men, you know, so I'm actually happy to see that there's a lot more women in restaurants and shutting it down. There's a lot of female chefs that I've had the honor and privilege to work alongside and collab with, and that's something that I like to see on a regular basis as well, because when you do think about food and love, and it really does come from both. So I'm happy to see that on a regular basis now.
You know, I just thought about that. That's interesting because, yeah, you think about it traditionally, not to sound sexist, but it's like most of the time in a household, a woman, your mom is the one that's really making
1,000%.
Mom, grandma, yeah. Auntie, absolutely
but
is.
In restaurants, it's opposite, men yeah. are the chefs.
And I think about it comes to a point where in restaurants, you probably get paid a little bit more than your regular standard jobs. You know, like even me, I was 15 years old and I was getting paid at that time. It was like $10 an hour, but minimum wage was $7.50 or $6.50. Hmm. So I was like, I'm already ahead of the game. I'm making $4 more than anybody else, and that was me at 15. So when I was getting a check of $800 for every 2 weeks, I thought I was rich. Think about that now. I don't even leave my house if I don't make $800.
So at what point did you say, okay, this is something that I could actually take serious? You went to school for this, right?
Yeah, I went to it started in Long Island City High School. I went to a high school that had the program. So the program was just learning how to make, you know, brownies and cookies and
like a home ec class?
Like a home ec class, I would say that, you know. But me, I was being the typical jock, and I was like, I'm not going to wear an apron. I don't want to be in a place where you think about, you know, they were my friends, but, you know, we tease each other a little bit. And the last thing I need is to give my teammates on the football team and on the baseball team something else to tease me other than me being 5 feet tall. Thank God for those extra 5 inches. So it's one of those things where it took a lot for me to put my pride aside and say, all right, let me put my focus onto something. So shout out to my ex-girlfriend high school, Maria, because if it wasn't for her,
exactly, right?
She pushed me into cooking. You know, she wanted me to show a little bit of interest and support the way she was supporting me by being at every game, every match, being my biggest cheerleader, no pun intended, because she was on the cheerleading squad too. So she was forced to be there. It wasn't
Or maybe she chose to be there. She chose to be a cheerleader.
I'm
going to
take it on that.
Athlete.
I'm going to take it on that.
Come
I'm
going
to take it on that.
Like, you the man.
I'm going to take it on that. So if it wasn't for her, I would have never went into cooking. And she gave me the opportunity to put my talent into something else, because I was a good sports. I was good in baseball. I was great in wrestling. I was okay in football. Being on a platform where I'm the solo star, like cooking, that was all thanks to her.
So, all right. So you went to CIA, which is one of the top culinary institutes in the world, right?
The Culinary Institute of America, the CIA, is the elite school for culinary. So it's like, you know, we're the Cornell of culinary schools, you know. It's one of those things where they provided a program and a way for you to learn more than just cooking. You know, I thought at 17, 18 years old, I'm here learning about wines of the world. I'm here learning. There was one of my favorite classes was product knowledge, where literally by the end of the class, you would have a table full of ingredients. You can't pick them up. You can't smell them. You can't touch them. You have to know what it is just by looking at it.
But that was, I mean, there was a process for you to get
into. Oh, there was
a
process to learn that. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, you don't get that overnight.
Yeah. So, I mean, you weren't just chosen for the school. You had to apply and go through a whole process to be
so
in the program.
Through the program, I was fortunate enough. Thank you for mentioning that. CCAP, Careers Through Culinary Arts Program. These people are the reason why I am who I am as a chef. And I say that more because it was more than just an opportunity to win a scholarship. They were a family. You know, Richard Grossman, the founder, he was like my second dad. And when he sees people that he believes in, just like my old high school teacher, Terry Matsis, you know, he's retired now. Good for him. You know, he put in effort and he put in the hard work to make sure that we had the opportunity. You know, I did a cooking class that led me to a cooking competition that led me to winning $40,000 to the CIA. You know, never in a million years did I think I would win a scholarship, let alone get 40 grand.
How much does CIA cost?
CIA now, probably 40 grand a year.
40 grand, yeah.
So I saved like half.
So, so
it's a 2-year program. So you're getting an associate's degree in culinary arts and business management. So aside from that, you know, I dormed there. I'm not going to go back and home, even though I was close to home. I still, you know, took on the full college experience. Yeah,
40 bands is a lot.
40 bands is a lot.
So
sorry to cut you off. Let's just say 15 years ago, I graduated. I just finished paying off Sallie Mae. And I got
for the other 40.
For the other 40. Looks like I took a long time. That was a good day.
I don't worry, I'm still paying.
All right. So you finished college and then you go into corporate world right after that?
I started right after college. I joined there was a restaurant called Gotham Bar and Grill. So before I got into corporate, I literally did what any young chef should do and is bust your ass for the next 2 years and give 6 months to the top chefs in New York City. So I worked with Marcus Samuelson. I worked with Jean George. I worked with Daniel Balud. I worked with Alfred Portali. That was the place where I did my 6 month, my 18 week internship at the CIA. And then I got hired right out of college. So I was lucky enough that, and that was one of those things where I determined that I'm going to come in early, even though I'm not getting paid. I got paid an internship wage, which was still at least getting paid.
How much did you get paid?
I think it was like $7.50 an hour.
Okay. After you graduated?
During my internship, okay. Before I graduated, I was like right in the middle.
So Alfred Bortali, he's the head chef at the Gotham Bar and Grill?
He was the executive chef at Gotham Bar and Grill for about over 30 years. He just opened. It's funny because I went to Gotham Bar and Grill last night because I needed some nostalgia. I went to Strip House and I was like, let me just go to Gotham Bar and Grill, have an amazing old fashioned and some
little flashback.
A little flashback. And I walked in and they're like, well, Alfred's not here anymore. He just opened up his own restaurant like 3 blocks away. Okay. And I'm like, nah, I need to go there.
But the restaurant itself, when he was there, it was Michelin star.
It was Michelin star. So 3-star. It was 3-star New York Times consistently for 30 years in a row, which is very hard to do. The highest you can get is 4 stars in New York Times, and Michelin is 3. So they were 1-star Michelin, and they were 3-star New York Times, which is elite. Aside from that, it's one of those classifications of knowing that you're branded by the Michelin guide knows that you're top of your tier.
So, all right. Then you started working at the Strand, right?
So after Gotham Bar and Grill, I did. I was at a restaurant called Café des Artistes. And I had my opportunity to become like a junior sous chef. That was the first time I had an opportunity.
A sous chef is a chef underneath the head chef,
that
right?
That is correct, yeah.
So it's like a...
Not a sushi hierarchy. Chef.
The apprentice.
I get that all the time. There's people like, oh, so you do sushi? I'm like, I shout out to the movie Ratatouille that let everybody know who is a sous chef and who is a sous chef and what they do. Because at that moment in my part of my life, I was a sous chef. I'm like, finally, people are going to stop thinking that I make sushi.
So what's the order?
So the chain of command would be like when you first walk into a restaurant, like I did this. I worked as a dishwasher for a couple months. Then I did prep, which is all you do is peel potatoes, clean vegetables, literally all the dirty stuff that people don't think about because we come into restaurants as cooks and things are ready for us. Like I don't have to peel my own garlic. I don't have to peel my own shallots. I don't have to peel my own potatoes. I don't have to peel my own onions. When you do these cooking shows, you got to do everything. You take for granted that you don't have your prep cooks or your with you, you know, to help you out. But you have that chain of command of prep cooks. Then the very next step is garmanger, which is salads and cold appetizers. Then if you're good at that, you move to hot apps, which is usually like little pastas, risottos, seared foie gras, depending on a restaurant. I did 10 years in French. I was classically French trained, working at restaurants like, Café des Artistes and with Jean-Georges and Restaurant Daniel. But those are all like little 6-month stints. I just wanted to learn a little bit from all of these great chefs and knowing that my foundation later on, I was still going to use a little bit of what they taught me. And then after Café des Artistes, I got an opportunity to become an executive chef at the age of 22.
In Westchester,
White Plains. Yeah.
We're at
Antipasti was the name of the restaurant. Yeah, Antipasti. Yeah, yeah. And it was an Italian restaurant. I'm like, shit, I don't even do Italian food. Why are you even offering me this job?
At 22 years old.
And there That's was a crazy. Guy, shout out to Orlando Santana. I don't know where you are, but thank you, my man, because if it wasn't for you, I would have continued to doubt myself. And he told me, I remember I said, how am I going to be a chef at 22? I'm going to need to know all the answers that the guys are going to ask me. He's like, dummy, you're going to know the answers because it's going to be your food. And I said, shit, this guy's right. All right, let's do it. And it was a memorable experience. I was a chef at 22. I saw my name on the menu for the first time and I learned how to do Italian food thanks to the sous chef that was there. I inherited John... I don't remember his last name, but John was amazing at Antipasti. We're friends on Facebook. I'm going to send you a message and tell you to listen to this. But John, he taught me how to make pizza. He taught me how to do fresh pasta. And he taught me that his secret was putting some truffle oil in chocolate cake. And still to this day, I do that. So when people ask me what's different about my chocolate cake, I'm like, I can't tell you. But I just told everybody, it's truffle oil. It's truffle oil.
So, all right. Because you're in a different market than like, you're in a high-end market.
Yeah.
Like going to your education and working in like a New York City or LA cities like that. How much money do chefs get paid? Like the top chef, the sous chef, the prep, like what's the...
It all depends. Because even me, I'll tell you when I made my most money was as an executive chef was when I was 22 years old and I was making 150 grand, and I made them pay me because I was leaving New York City, right? So
in Westchester, you made
in
that
Westchester, yeah. So I made that money in Westchester.
Left Gotham.
I left Gotham. I left Cafe Des Artistes because the general manager at that restaurant was going to go to be the general manager at Antipasti. And he took me with me, and I said, this is what I want to leave, because, of course, at that time, I was like, I live in Queens. At that point, I was living
in
Queens.
Where is White Plains?
Where is White Plains? I got to take Metro North. I've never done that in my life. I got to pay $200 a month for a train ticket. I'm like, I need to allocate all these things into my salary.
Yeah.
But I got a reality check right away when I left Antipasti, and I came back to the city, and I knew that taking a step back, sometimes you got to take a couple steps back to move forward. So here I am, 24 years old. The reason I left Antipasti was because the restaurant was going out of business because of things that happened previous to me arriving there. There was just no fixing that. And they went to court, and the judge ordered that the company get dismantled and everybody sell their shares. So to me, it was another learning step. You know, I was an executive chef. Here I am, 24 years old, coming to New York City, trying to apply for all these executive chef jobs. And everybody was like, who is this kid? Like, why is he here? We're looking for an executive chef.
Yeah, I mean, they're looking at you as a kid, because most guys that are executive chefs are, what, 40, 50
35,
years old?
40, yeah. Nowadays, you have different types of chefs, you know? So you see the inspirational people that, you know, there was a movie called Chef Flynn, where there's this kid who was 15 years old, and, you know, he learned by reading books and watching YouTube, and he literally has his own restaurant at, like, 22 years old downtown in New York City. So, like, I'm inspired by that story. Mm-hmm. And I remember reading that story while I was at La Marina, and he came out front page of the New York Times. I'm like, there's no way that this kid is a chef. There's no way. I'm like, I worked my ass off to go to school and work for all these chefs, and he's worked for nobody, and he's a chef. I went to have his food. He's a chef. So his documentary, he's a chef. You know, it's a whole different perspective of what types of chefs they are nowadays. You know, like I had a meeting with one of my friends last night, and she has her own meal prep service, and she doesn't want to call herself a chef. She doesn't want to buy herself a chef jacket. I'm like, you deserve to call yourself a chef. You do the food. You create the menus. You taught yourself. It's okay. You're not an executive chef, but you are a chef. So that's why I say there's lots of different levels of chefs. But yeah, I learned the hard way, because people were looking at me, and I was young, and I was always hungry. So I just needed to get to the point of being able to cook for you. If I can cook for you, I want. I already know that. So as an executive chef, if you're trying out, it's not just a resume. You have a portfolio. And you do what's called a tasting. So you're offering me a job. Before we even talk numbers, we got to see what you can do.
So you, I mean, as the executive chef, you obviously create the menu, right? So you're doing the appetizers, the entrees, the desserts. Are you also creating the pricing?
You're doing the food costs, yeah. You're doing the pricing. So you have to learn. That's why if it wasn't for culinary school, I wouldn't have known how to do food costs. I would have known what labor costs was.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so basically for you to make money, you multiply the amount of what a food costs by three, I would say. Higher expensive fine dining restaurants will do it by four. So for example, if it costs me to make a hamburger, right? I'm not gonna make just any hamburger. I'm gonna make Chef Kelvin burger, right? So we're gonna put it on the menu for $18. So for me to make money, that burger cannot cost me more than $6. So that's the patty, the buns, the condiments, the French fries, and the labor to make that dish. So for you to make money, you always multiply things by three. Depending on what the business is. So for you to learn about food costs, you have to break down how much does the 4 ounces of the meat cost? How much does one burger bun cost? How much does one slice of lettuce cost? Here's one tomato. How much does a case of tomato cost? And how many slices of that tomato do I get? So to really break it down, it takes a lot of work to do food costs. But only the most successful people are the ones that do their food costs right.
And that's true with any business. And I'm glad you said that, because a lot of times people go into business and they just wing it. Like, I'm gonna charge.
I'm gonna Costco. I'm gonna Sam's, and I'm just gonna charge $12.
No, that's a fact. It's like, yeah, I'm gonna charge.
Show me how you decided to charge that $12.
I think people will pay $15 for this fish sandwich, so I'll charge $15. Like, yeah.
You wouldn't know that it cost you $8 to make it.
Is that it? Is no rhyme or reason why you're doing it. You're just winging it. And that's, like I said, that's true in the food industry, but that's true in any industry. Yeah. And it's like, you got to have a set formula to know, like, you got to have a profit margin. If not, you're screwed.
You're going to be in debt.
Absolutely. And nobody wants a business that's not making money.
So what else is, like, business side did they teach you in
aside school? From food costs, labor costs, it's how to treat people. People management, you know, and I always joke around that on my, I always joke around saying that on my resume, I'm a professional babysitter. because you have to be able to manage people. And there's so many different personalities. There's so many different people, how people were raised, how people grew up, and what restaurants they grew up in. This is why my best advice is, if you want to be great, surround yourself by greatness. Surround yourself by people that you aspire to be like. Surround yourself by people that you want to be better than, in a sense of greatness. And that's why I've worked for all these great people. And I learned how to manage people because of, I always treated people with respect. There was a restaurant that I worked at in the beginning of high school years where my weekends, instead of playing baseball with my friends, I'm here at a restaurant volunteering my time just so I can learn and know to make sure that if I want to go through this career, before I go to culinary school, before I sign that $40,000 Sally Mae loan, do I want to be in the restaurant business? So I volunteered my time. I worked at this place called The Water's Edge in Queens. And I worked for a chef who was like, you know, have you seen Gordon Ramsay?
Yeah.
Let's put Gordon Ramsay times 10.
Oh, wow.
Shout out to George Mazaroff. I love you. He was like dad number three. But he was tough, man. Mm. And I was 15, 16 years old, and I'm getting things thrown at me. I'm getting called every name in the book. The moment he found out I was Dominican, he's like, ah, that explains it all. You're a Dominican handicap. And I'm like, wow. And I knew what he was doing wasn't right, but to me, it made me tougher, right? I grew to a sense of I became a man a lot faster. But I also knew that I'm not going to be that guy. Yeah. No matter how talented he was, and still is, I was not going to treat my staff like that.
Yeah, it's a lesson.
So what's the labor cost?
So labor costs, when you come to labor costs, you think about how much money people are making per hour. And an example, there's restaurants where if you're in a hotel and corporate, you're making a lot more. You're probably making double to what chefs and cooks normally make in restaurants. And that's just because I've had the opportunity to work in both. So let's say, for example, when I was at the Strand Hotel, it was a non-unionized hotel when we first started, and I was there for about 6 years, and then I left to open up Blend on the Water, which is my first Latin restaurant. And then after that, the Marriott Vacation Club company came in, bought it out, and when I got there, I came back, but I saw it anyway as I don't ever like to go back to something, but for me, it was like, oh, it's corporate now. It went from a small boutique hotel to the Marriott. Maybe this is what's right for me. Maybe I do want to be a corporate chef. Maybe I want to be able to have my food in multiple Marriotts. But when I got there, all of a sudden, the dishwasher who was making $10 an hour is now making $20 an hour. Mm. The line cook who was making $17 an hour now is making $27 an hour. So now it's like, I can't have a successful kitchen doing the food that I do because now I can only have one dishwasher. Now I can only have two cooks, not four.
Or so, it cuts into your margin?
Cuts into my margin because at the end of the day, your labor cost has to be, you think about this, there's 100%, right? Your food cost has to be under 30%, right? Your labor cost has to be under, let's say 20%, 20 to 25%. Then you have to think about liquor costs, under 18%, because all this is cutting into your profit. Mm. Then you think about rent, think about electricity, water, you're left with like 10% at the end of the day. So the more that I save on food, labor is the more money that gets into the pocket of the business.
That's a typical profit margin for restaurants, 10%?
It's tough. That's why a lot of restaurants go out of business. There were times where I saw where we made $2.2 million and after all expenses, we came home with $200,000.
Yeah. We did an episode with a restaurant owner in Baltimore. Shout out to Derek Falcon. And his thing was a unique strategy that he has, but he only uses mixed use properties for his thing because he gets the rent from people that live upstairs and is subsidized. It takes less pressure off of him at the restaurant. How do you feel about
100%,
that?
100%. No, he's smart. You're finding ways to make more money in your pocket.
Another thing, he doesn't open every day.
Yeah, so. And you don't have to open every day.
Right.
People are so afraid of, granted, I see the mentality of the day that, the moments that we're closed are opportunities to make money. Yeah, that's also opportunities for you to lose money. It's okay to have Monday, Tuesday off. Guess what? Now you have a staff that's happy because everybody has 2 days off consecutively. This is a business where, you know, I'm grateful when I get 2 days off in a row, but I'm at a point where I make my own schedule, but I'm also a hustler. I also love money and I also love working. So I this is busy season for me. I'm lucky if I have 3 days off this month, you know, but I also take the whole month of January off. So there's it works out pretty well, right?
Nice luxury to have.
It works out pretty well. And I also take off 2 weeks for my birthday in July. So it's the heat of the business. But at the end of the day, I put myself in a position where I deserve that and I earn that.
You earned your leisure.
You earn your leisure. But again, other than that, you see me hustling every single day. If you follow me on Instagram, you know that I'm always working, whether it's doing a video on YouTube now, whether it's speaking at a high school or a elementary school. It's me at Last Lap, or it's me doing a private dinner for 20, or doing a private dinner for 10, or doing an event for 150 people. So I'm grateful that because of what I do so many dope, different things on a regular basis.
Well, that leads us right into our next segment. We're going to talk about some entrepreneurial stuff that you do, and take it from there. All right, so now we're going to go into the second segment, and I wanted to just talk about a couple of things that we spoke about off camera. You talked about you did the pop-up dinners. That became wildly successful, right?
Yeah.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things, like, I'm getting goosebumps now because I got another pop-up dinner that's coming up on the 19th and the 20th of December. But we got into that because of not being in a restaurant on a regular basis. My demand was higher. The only way that you can have my food is by you booking me. So it's kind of me like forcing the other hand. It's like, you want my food?
Book me.
You book me. And I'm not going to lie. What I do with food changes the way that you see food. For example, if you have my mac and cheese, you'll never see mac and cheese again unless it's my mac and cheese. Because every time you take a bite of someone else's mac and cheese, you're like, damn, it's good, but this is not Kelvin's.
What do you do with the mac
and cheese? Just textures and flavors. And like, I'm salivating now.
I'm getting hungry thinking about this, man. We about to put a new standard, man. All chefs, restaurants. Y'all got to bring food with y'all, man.
You should have told me that. We're going to make something happen.
Now, you brought something else that we're going to talk about.
I brought something else, but I can never come in empty-handed. I always introduce myself with food, but today I introduce myself with something else we'll talk about later.
The only way that they could eat your food
is by booking me, yeah. That was the only way.
So what restaurant were you at that time?
At that time, I wasn't at a restaurant. Okay. It was the first time that... It was 2018 when the Marriott Vacation Company closed down. They just decided they didn't want a restaurant. No matter how successful the restaurant was, we weren't making money. And the reason we weren't making money because the labor was too high. Mm. And there was nothing I could do.
Yeah.
I was on the line. And that's something when on the line means I was actually cooking the food. That's a line cook's job. You know what I mean? As a chef, I'm creating the menu. I'm teaching the line cooks how to do food like me. And that's what I think makes me a little bit successful. On the end where I really take into consideration the teaching part. I love to teach, right? So if you're one of my employees and we got a new menu, me and you are going to cook salmon side by side for 2 weeks straight.
Yeah, so I, in my mind, I work with kids, so I'm thinking like the line cook is like the minion.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're your minions.
They absolutely are, and they're only as good as how you train them, right?
Okay, got you.
So, and I'm grateful that everybody that's been a part of my team is just... Now, like 10 years later, 5 years later, even 2 years later, like I'll take the biggest example was La Marina. La Marina was one of the best teams that I've ever assembled in my entire life. And I'll say that because it was such a big team, so many different personalities, so many talented chefs that are all executive chefs now. Like Trill Cooker is Chef Jose de Jesus, one of my road dogs. This guy has been with me for about 4 years and he has his own pop-up dinners in his home. Like he does infused cannabis dinners as well. He comes on the road with me when I need to go to J-Lo and A-Rod's. You know,
so, yeah, I want to talk about the pop-up because that's interesting for a few different reasons. So, you built a following on social media at the time already.
Thanks for doing the food shows, doing Food Network, doing Be Bobby Flay. That also helps out.
Yeah, for sure. So the pop-up, can we get back to that? Because that's an interesting business model.
So the pop-up, the reason we did the pop-up was because we wanted to do something once a month, whether it was a pop-up event where it was like Friendsgiving. We sold tickets online. They sold out in one day. We're like, okay, this is we're on to something.
What's the Friendsgiving?
So the Friendsgiving was around Thanksgiving. We would do almost like we rent out a loft. We invite 100 people. You buy tickets online. You get food catered by me, whether it was past hors d'oeuvres plus an actual meal. I'm always fancy. So we did like first meal was an actual Thanksgiving meal. You get turkey, caramelized Brussels sprouts, stuffing and gravy. And then the next meal would be like something Latin, like pernil, which is like a roasted pork with mac and cheese and something else. And then, of course, you get my arepas. It's not an event if my arepas are not there. And if people walk into the building and they see me, the first question is, are we having arepas? And that has to be yes. Sometimes people don't book me for arepas and I tell them, if they're yelling at me, I'm gonna point them to your direction. You're taking that hit, not me. So I learned that the pop-up thing was such a big demand because already I'm not giving you the luxury to have my food on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. So every time I did a different pop-up, we wanted to do like a tacos and tequila. So we'd rent out, it would be summertime, we'd rent out a rooftop and do a dope event like that. And then I started noticing that I wanted to do more of a sit-down experience. So Valentine's Day was like the first time that we did. We rented out a place in Mott Haven. It was called Motley Kitchen, which was not known for being a restaurant. It's just a bakery. Mm-hmm. And out of that bakery, they do catering. So I rented out the spot. We did 50 people three nights in a row, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, sold out. And then from that moment on, I was just like, people will follow me wherever I am.
So how much money were you making off the pop-ups?
Off the pop-ups, let's say that's when I would be making, it depends on location. It depends on the rent of the venue. At the end of the day, I always try to make 25% to 30% profit compared to like what we talked about, 10% profit in a restaurant.
How many people are going with you? How many to do an event?
To do an event?
Yeah.
Depending on the size. So for that, I had three cooks. I had a host, which was my best friend. Shout out to Eric. This guy has become like my manager, my assistant, my brother. But I also give him love because he got to be in some dope commercials with me too. So he was the host. I had three servers. So I would say a team of about less than 10, but about 7 to 8 people.
Mm-hmm.
But depending on the event, like I have another event that we did with the NFL Amazon, and we had a team of 14 people. It all depends on what we need to produce as a team. And me, I'm so hands-on, so I'm always still cooking. I need to learn sometimes to take a step back and let the team make me proud like they always do.
So like the event in Mount Haven, because I'm interested, I'm going somewhere with this, like how much would you say?
So we charge $150 per person, 50 people per night, which was like, let's say $4,500. And then after that, we paid $1,000 for the venue for 3 days, or it was like $1,600 for 3 days. Because we got it 3 days consecutive, it was a deal. Yeah. And I'm a negotiator. I will negotiate to as much, because I guess at the end of the day, I learned if you don't ask, you'll never know.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So if you're charging me $500 per day, I'm like, can you give me $400 per day, and I'll give you 3 dates in a row instead of just one event, so on and so forth. So you need to be able to learn how to talk, learn how to negotiate. And at the end of the day, you offer a barter. You know, I'm very big on barters, where I'm like, okay, if you give it to me at this price, I'll give you 2 tickets to the event as well. You know, so you need to be able to learn how to work with people. I was fortunate enough that my partner for this event, he was great on getting liquor sponsors, because that is where and the reason why we made money. Because if I had to pull out of pocket for liquor,
that's going to kill you.
That's going to kill us.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
We're already paying for food. We're already paying for a venue. We're already paying for staff. Take off that liquor, and that's the money that we're making.
Okay.
So that, again, not every event that I do, I get a liquor sponsor, but I try to.
Okay. So like 5,000 profit?
Out of 3 days, 5,000 profit split between me and my partner. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, the reason why, so it's like $2,500, let's just say. So, but that's not bad for a weekend. It's all about creativity. So it's like a lot of times, if you're not familiar with New York City, Mont Haven, South Bronx.
South Bronx.
South Bronx, not really the best neighborhood.
But up and coming.
Yeah.
It's a good thing to buy something now because it's gonna be big. It's gonna be big.
Homo Frenchie. So there's a few different lessons in that, I think. Exclusivity is very important. And it's like people, the more you make yourself available, you devalue yourself. It's like Supreme, the clothing line, right? It's like people will pay $1,000 for it because you can't get it. It's not easy to get.
Right?
Even like with the marathon clothes right now, rest in peace to Nip, but it's like, people is lined up around the corner for the pop-up store because you can't really get the clothes. Like, it's hard to really get right now,
right? It
takes
like 4 months to get it right now.
So by you making yourself like the pop-ups, like once a month, however you was doing it, it's like now it's a whole event as opposed to just having a mom and pop shop. You're just selling food every day. It's like they just walk past you. You come out once a month and you got to be creative. So it's like you didn't pick the most expensive real estate in New York City. You picked the hood.
And I'm not afraid to pick the hood. There's times where, like the event that we're doing on 19th and the 20th, we paid prime dollar for 37th Street between 8th and 9th, you know? But at the end of the day, it depends on the event that we're doing and, of course, the network.
And you're at that point in your career.
Yeah.
But for people that's just starting out, a lot of times it's like they feel intimidated. But it's like work with the resources that you have.
I think that's so important that you're saying that because you have to be able to no budgets. Like you said, you're not going to be successful if you're breaking even. You're not going to be successful if you're not charging the right prices. You know, of course, I wasn't able to charge $150 if this was 10 years ago for me and my brand and who I am now. But with the accolades and with the awards and constantly winning, you know, an award after an award, and the people that I cook for, it's vouching for itself. And I always joke around and I say, my food is all hype until you finally experience it yourself.
Mm. Yeah. And I was just telling, one of my friends this the other day, cause we were talking about like a business, and we was talking, actually Jamal actually said it originally, and I relayed the message, and he's like, the business is only gonna bring like, let's say like 2,000 a month. And at first I'm like, that's not worth it. Like, that's 2,000. But then I'm like thinking about it, like, well, that's 2,000.
It's an extra 2,000.
Like, you know what I'm saying? You threw that five times, now you got 10,000. Yeah. So easy. It's like, it's not about hitting, it's never about hitting home runs.
Absolutely.
It's never, because if you play baseball, you don't swing for a home run. You swing and eventually you'll hit a home run if you're strong enough. But you don't plan to hit home runs because you'll just strike out. It's never about home runs. It's about consistently building your name, building your brand, getting 2,000, 1,000. That adds up over the course of time. A lot of times people, like,
that
they want to just make.
Going up.
And that's why I wanted to ask how much you made too, because that's kind of what I figured you made. And I people get intimidated, like, I got to make 50,000 for a weekend. It's like, not when you first start. That's not how it works.
I'm saying, like, you make 2,500, like, that's somebody's month.
Yeah,
you
know you're absolutely right. And I've thought of that. And there's certain times where I haven't made money on events, because you have to understand, what is this event bringing to me also? Is it an event that I have influencers that are going to, every single person, tag me in their Instagram posts? Because those are deals that I have made too. And I was afraid to make those in the past until I finally made one. And I was like, holy shit, I just got 1,500 new followers in a day? Yeah. Like, how? Because every single person that was there was an influencer or was in their own life a star, whether it was a singer, whether it was an actress, whether it was a songwriter, whether it was an artist, whether it was a banker. They were all at the top of the game at that. And when I did that event, I was okay, I need to find ways that I can
do more of that. Because now the product is going to speak for itself.
Because the product is going to speak for itself. You know, people are posting, people are eating, they're having their reactions. And all of a sudden, out of those new 1,500, guess what? I just made some income from those people booking me.
Yeah.
So like you said, supply and demand. And then also you have to make sure that, like you said, I'm doing an event on the 19th and the 20th. That's one of the most expensive events I've ever done. I'm doing a collab with Griselda Valle, which is an incredible woman, incredible voice. And we're charging $175 per person, you know, but at the end of the day, people don't know the expense that comes into pulling off an event in New York City on 37th Street.
37.
where you're just buying a raw stage, a raw form, where you have to buy stage and lights.
And the highlight of the holiday season.
And the holiday season where Christmas is in 2 weeks. And that's why we sold it 2 months ago, where we sold out again in one day. And I'm blessed to be able to say that, like you said, supply and demand. If you put yourself available every single day, I'm not going to sell an event out every single day. But if we do it once a month, guess what? People talked about it for a whole month. We're posting for the next one. We're going to do it again. Already, people haven't experienced
it. I'm glad you said that.
People haven't experienced this event, and when's the next?
I mean, that sounds
how
like.
How is the hype so high? We haven't even done it yet.
That sounds like an event that we just did in D.C.
I love that.
And the streets, we got the streets going crazy.
I love that.
Atlanta, don't play yourself.
Yeah, we're telling you now.
Don't waste time. I think I'm going
to come. So, can we talk about another thing that you did, Coquito.
Say it right like you know it, man.
Coquito. Come Coquito. On. You've had it before.
Coquito.
There we go. You sound like a pro.
Now, Puerto Rican drink.
Traditional classic Puerto Rican. Love it. I would say Thanksgiving holiday drink.
Season. Yeah.
Like Thanksgiving, Christmas, and maybe New Year's, but that's a little pushing.
That's always the gift that they give you. 100%. No disrespect.
No disrespect. So, this is a Latino's house. They
that's
have
what they
giving
you.
The
so, they got like 17 bottles in the fridge.
So, if you're from New York City, you know. You got Boricuas, yep. Puerto Ricans. You got Dominicanos,
yes,
Dominicans.
Don't leave us. Don't do that.
They're different. Don't ever confuse.
You got Jamaicans too.
don't ever confuse the two, right? They have different cultures, different foods, different vibes.
But so many similarities.
For sure. Like we all do.
Absolutely.
But that particularly is a Puerto
That's
Rican.
A Puerto Rican, yeah.
That's a Puerto Rican thing, right?
It's traditional.
So you being a Dominican, what made you do that?
I did it as a joke. Kind of like spur of the moment. No, it wasn't funny. It wasn't funny. And it was one of those things where I was like, let's test the market. This is like 5 years ago, you know, where Chef Kelvin was finally building his brand. And I'll talk in the third person now because even in the streets, I'm not Kelvin anymore. Chef Kelvin. Yo, yeah. Chef. I remember I was on the train once and somebody's, yo, Chef. I'm like, oh shit, I made it. Somebody's calling me out on the train. I was like, damn, I can't be on the train no more. I'm joking around, you know, but in reality, the coquito is traditional Puerto Rican. So I did it and I'm like, let me find ways to, what makes a chef unique is making something that's classic, traditional, reinvented, right? So I didn't reinvent the wheel when I made this coquito. I just made it mine. I'm like, everybody makes it with Bacardi. Let's make Hennessy. Everybody uses these ingredients. Let's use those ingredients, but let's add something else into it. I can't tell you the secret. and then again, everybody uses cinnamon. I'm going to use exotic spices. Like, I'm using...
You're privy to them.
Yeah. Things that I've used in cooking. So, like that's the cool thing about it. I'm thinking of making coquito as, like, making a dessert for me. Because in reality, it's a little bit sweet. It's thick in flavor. It's coconutty. And it's... I use it for, like, French toast batter now. Yeah. I use it to make ice cream. I use it... to let's take that to the next level. So, of course, when I make coquito for the first time, there's a lot of, you know, people saying that's not traditional, but it's okay. I'm not looking to be traditional. Yeah. I'm looking to be Chef Kelvin. So I'm making coquito. That's why my coquito says on the label, Coquito by Chef Kelvin.
Yeah.
If you're looking for traditional, like, I'm sure you can find those out there. And again, there's plenty of room for all of us to eat. I know I had people hit me up on a regular, like, please don't sell your coquito in Jersey. Please don't sell your coquito in Brooklyn. Like, you already do enough. I'm like... but I want more.
Yeah.
What's the problem with wanting more?
So how'd you get that out?
I posted it on Instagram, man. I posted it on Instagram. Back then I had like 30,000 followers. I'm blessed to have like almost 67, 68 now. I posted it and I said I made it for myself. I wasn't even selling it. I was like, I just made Henny Coquito. Right away, there were no DMs back then. There were just comments. So I posted it on my page and I got flooded with comments in like the first 5 minutes.
Yeah, you said the magic word. Hennessy.
Hennessy. Yeah, Hennessy. And they're like, are you selling? And I was like, nah, I'm not selling. So I just made it for my friends. We had it. Then the next year, I was like, let me just make 20 bottles and see what happens. I made it. I sold out in 10 minutes. And I said, all right, we're going to make a business next year. Because again, I knew I didn't bite off more than I can chew. I wasn't ready to start a business. And I wasn't when I launched it in 2016. But I was fortunate enough that I was working at La Marina and I had a kitchen of disposal. They were only open for a season. So when we were there in the winter, it was just for private events. So I ended up using their kitchen to make coquito and I paid some guys that were on my team. They're loyal. Alex and David, these guys have been through everything with me and they're both at Last Lap. So even though I'm not at Last Lap, you know, you can get great food with them. But we started a business. We got labels. We got gift bags. We started answering, made up an email. We made up a Venmo, a Cash App, opened up a bank account and we opened up a business.
How much did you sell?
First year of officially selling, we sold 250 bottles, which I thought was not bad for, we started late. We started only in December.
Yeah.
Following year, we sold 500 bottles. And now we're in unofficially year 5. We've already sold 600 bottles and we're not even at peak season yet. So Christmas is our big one. We're looking to sell about 300 or 400 bottles.
The reason why I love that story also, see, this is all things that, especially food, it's like your grandmother, your aunt, your mom makes these homemade rums and all of these stuff. But it's like, and people like it, right? But it's like, why is it just limited to your family?
You're absolutely right. You can sell anything unless the product is good. Hmm. And you can't be afraid. Again, don't reinvent the wheel. Like I said, I'm not doing nothing new. I'm just making the version. I'm making it mine. I just made it a little bit different. I'm using Madagascar vanilla bean. That's why you know it's expensive. Mm. Each vanilla bean is like $5.
Is that the secret?
That is one of the
one
secrets.
One of them.
At the end of the day,
your leisure exclusive.
I gave you one secret already.
We got some here, y'all. Yeah, we're going to try it after this.
I gave you one secret already. And I tell people, I'm like, vanilla bean is special. It's the reason why you see the specks in the vanilla ice cream. You know, it's the reason you see the specks in the creme brulee. But at the end of the day, it's the special spices.
And it's always about...
And the love.
Well, you can't duplicate that. Yeah. But it's always about being creative, too. And it's like, we're going to talk about La Marina, but La Marina is only open for 2 months of the year, right? 3 months?
I would say pushing four.
So events.
It would open April, and it would close, I would say, beginning of September. It would close.
But you had access to
kitchen. Had access full year, yeah.
Year round. So now you use that to pretty much have a free kitchen.
I found ways, yeah. I asked, you know, I said, hey, you guys are not doing anything. I even offered to rent. They're like, nah, because at the end of the day, the way that no one knew really about my contract, but the way that my contract worked, again, I'm not a greedy guy, so I understand things. If we were not open full year, I wasn't expecting to get paid full year. But what I did want was the times that we were just seasonal, you put me as an independent contractor and you would still pay me 50% of my yearly salary. So I was still getting a check every week. But it wasn't the full 100%. So I needed to find ways to make money.
Yeah, you had access.
I had access. Yeah. Okay, now I'm going to start doing caterings. Now I'm going to start, you know, doing coquito. Now I'm going to start, and that the opportunity was there. I wasn't afraid to do things that I wasn't expecting, and I also wasn't desperate. I was patient throughout the whole process. Like I said, I sold 20 coquitos year one. We're at 500 now, and we're not even halfway through our season.
You are can we Dominican.
Dominican.
Selling coquito.
Dominican selling coquito.
And on Dykeman.
Uptown is where they show love.
Oh, so, all right, can we talk about, I was waiting.
We just said the magic word, Dykeman.
Yeah, there it is.
Look at the smile.
Nah, if you're, lots of memories. If you're a loyal listener to Earn Your Leisure, you know how.
We got good friends up there.
Dykeman is a second home for us.
Absolutely.
The basketball tournament. We talk about the basketball tournament a lot. Because they treat us, they love us there. Shout out to everybody there. We're actually about to do Chris Gotti's show after this.
Right after this.
So shout out to Dykeman. But so it's east side, west side. So so on the east side, on the east side is the basketball court. On the west side by the water, that was La Marina. So we didn't tell the stories about La Marina.
Legendary La Marina.
If you're from New York City, you know about La Marina. If not, you heard Fab. You was in La Marina all summer. You heard French pull up La Marina in a yacht.
Boy.
Woo. Woo.
Special.
It made some easy captions on Instagram when they were making songs. It just made me feel like I'm on top of the world even more.
So we got to get off track for 1 minute. You was the executive chef in La Marina at its peak. La Marina was a beach. Best way I could describe it, it's like a beachfront party restaurant. Yeah.
It had everything.
You had
a beach, you had a lounge, you had food trucks,
you had a live stage.
Yeah, you had a live stage.
Beautiful women.
You had a restaurant, beautiful women. I got food. In trouble in
life. Food
and
trucks.
And I was just cooking.
So, can you just explain in a minute, what was the vibe in La Marina at that time?
So I'll tell you two quick vibes. One was, imagine being the only sober person at a drunk party. So when I was leaving work, kitchen closed at 12, I'm walking out, I'm just like, well, I can't even catch up. There's no way I can catch up. We got an hour left. So it was always a problem with La Marina because they closed at 1 o'clock. Mm. But the blessing of La Marina also was, that entire Dykeman was packed.
Ooh, that
of La Marina closing at 1 o'clock.
Oh, yeah.
So
Dykeman
it was a
blessing. Bar.
Oh, Dykeman Bar, Papacito.
Oh, Mama Sushi.
Mama Sushi.
Shout out to Mama Sushi, because those are one of the stories that I always love telling, because they started small, 18-seat restaurant, bought the door next door to the right, then bought the bodega to the left, and now you got a 75-seat restaurant.
And then put seats outside.
And then they're on their third, fourth location. God bless. Shout out to them. Those are the people that I aspire to be like, and I don't even have one location yet, but La Marina was a vibe. So not only the reason I worked there was because I used to party there a lot, and I jokingly around said in front of the wrong person, I wonder what it'd be like to work here. The opportunity presented itself, and still to this day, shout out to Fernando Mateo. He's the owner of Zona de Cuba, which is a dope spot.
Oh, down the street.
Yeah, and Zona de Cuba in the Bronx.
Okay. He just opened up
on top of a post office. Super dope. I think he paid somebody.
Yeah, it's fire.
I think he paid somebody because the moment I was living in Queens, traveling to Washington Heights. I got out the train station and somebody said, Chef Kelvin, welcome to Washington Heights. We've been waiting for you. There's no way. Still to this day, I remember that. But La Marina was just, it was madness. And I like to say controlled madness. It was the only time where I had it. I had a walkie-talkie on, and I'm talking to my sous chefs through this walkie-talkie. Yo, the beach is going down. We need more French fries. All right, French fries to the beach. I need two cooks to go to the beach.
Yo, French needs some food on the yacht.
French needs some food. Carmelo Anthony needs a tomahawk steak. Like, we're going to make that happen. It was one of the greatest experiences ever. I had an amazing team. Like I said, Chef Trill, Jose de Jesus, Chef Andy, who's the chef of Suyo in the Bronx. Like, these are just guys that are talented. Elio, who's in a Michelin star restaurant in Manhattan. Like, that's what makes me proud, because I feel like I'm a proud dad, even though we're all similar to age, you know?
Nah, La Marina.
La Marina's a vibe.
Hey, but you said that also on the business, you turned it around, the kitchen around.
Oh, man.
Like, can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, it was hard to come into a place that, this is why when making business decisions, it's hard for me to go to a place that already has an identity, because it's hard to change either bad habits or it's hard to change something where people are used to. So when I got to La Marina, they already had a standard. They went through a couple different chefs. The food was not great. And the owners themselves said it. we don't need to really worry about the food. People are going to come for the view. And I said, what you're doing wrong is you're not giving them another reason to come. People are going to come regardless. The view, the women, the parties, the artists, the Maseratis, the Ferraris.
The hookah.
The hookah. Back then, hookah was cash. Popping. Hookah was just cash. Cash is king in the world. Now you don't find a hookah uptown because everybody got to put it on the books. But it was such an experience where we learned. So my goal was to bring Chef Kelvin's food to an area that was not understanding it. So after being there for a full summer, I was able to turn around, lower the labor costs, lower the food costs, increase the food sales. I remember over almost like $375,000. And again, we were only open seasonal. So imagine what I could have done in a full year. We didn't have the opportunities because it gets cold down there by that water. So we did some great closed events. We did some great weddings. And 2015, 2016 was a year to remember for me for sure.
Yeah.
You made it.
All right.
Yeah, we made it.
R.I.P. to La Marina.
La Marina, yeah. We will miss you.
We will never be forgotten. Guam, but not forgotten.
That corner will never be the same.
It won't. It really won't. Even the strip is not the same anymore.
No, absolutely not. It's tough. Like, even me, I live in Riverdale, so I'm close to the madness, but I haven't been out there in a while.
Yeah.
It's not the same.
Yeah.
Dímelo to all the Dominicans uptown, man.
I love that. I love that. You guys like Coquito?
That's what I'm saying, man. Dímelo. We've been saying it all summer. Don't worry.
De lo mío. All
right. So in the last segment, we're going to go into what you got going on now and future endeavors. All right. So we're going to close it out with what you have going on now. So I want to talk about Last Lap.
Last Lap.
So can you talk about, that was an establishment that was already open and you partnered, right?
Yeah, Last Lap is such a great vibe. It's a Caribbean vibe. It's true to like my heart, my soul. Shout out to the guys at Last Lap. They're the reason I'm there because when we started just talking about it, you know, the vibe's got to be right. And these guys are young entrepreneurs doing their things, opening different establishments. There's going to be Last Lap LA. There's going to be Last Lap Miami. There's opportunity to continue to grow. And those are the right people to do it with. And they were open. And I went to, forgot to mention this. I went to France for 3 months. I lived in Lyon, France. At one point when the Strand decided to close down, I got a nice.
You're a French trained chef.
Classically French trained. I got a nice little severance check. And at that moment, I did a cooking competition, circle back again, 15 years. The same people that gave me a scholarship to go to high school gave me an opportunity to win a full scholarship to go to France and live all expense paid to go to a culinary school in France. Wow. Here I am at 30-something years old going again, learning, schooling. You can never stop learning. So I'm the only guy who was in this class who didn't speak French. And here I'm trying to communicate with people, but thank God that food is a universal language. Show me how to cut this, I will cut it the way you want it. Show me how to cook it, I will cook it the way you want it. But the reason I didn't get involved with Last Lap right away was because I was out here doing this 3 month stint in France. And I got back to Last Lap. We were doing some cool little Arepa Day vibes. Like, was there once a month again doing the pop up. And it was always a successful sold out night. We sat down and they made me a deal that I couldn't refuse. And they offered me a partnership. And I was able to establish my team there to make me feel comfortable to know that even though that I'm not there, the food is going to be great. So thanks to Chef David. Thanks for Chef Alex. Those guys have been with me for 10 plus years. And it's hard. Loyalty is a hard thing to find. And these guys make me proud every single day.
And one thing you said that was interesting is like you have like royalties, like a royalty deal, right?
So, you know, I watched them at Shark Tank.
Yeah.
And as a businessman, you got to learn, right? So, you know, I made them an offer of, you know, I wanted to make this much amount per arepa. And they said yes, and I shouldn't ask for more. But again, I'm not greedy. So, you know, I was just grateful for that opportunity. This is the first time that I've made a deal like that. And it's been steady. You know,
it's the only place that you can get. So that's Kelvin's Kitchen.
This is traditionally you could say Kelvin's Kitchen, but in reality, it's the only place that you can get that's my food, you know, aside from getting Kelvin himself with Kelvin's Kitchen, you know. Okay. So, you know, and Last Lap is a small rum bar. We got two floors. It gives you an opportunity to come have some amazing cocktails because they have a great mixology program. And then you never know who's going to be there the same day that you're there. We've gotten a lot of celebrities from Rihanna to Michael B. Jordan to the list goes on. We're always on page six. So that's a great thing.
That's dope.
So like, even though you're not there a lot cooking, but you have the recipe. So anytime your dish is sold or any dish is sold, you get a percentage of that.
I get a fee for each arepa that's sold, correct.
What is a Arepa.
An arepa. What is that? Say that again.
Arepa.
Arepa.
There we go. Arepa.
Yeah, you got no Caribbean.
No, it's not bad though. He said it better than the people that said it on a few other shows. They're like arepa. I'm like we're not raping nobody. I'm like arepa, and it's tough because it just comes with the culture and how we learn. But an arepa is the dish that I beat Bobby Flay with. An arepa is also the dish that I've won 4 years in a row Best Chef in America with Forbes. So I have 5 different versions of these arepas, and the only place you can find those is at Last Lap. So that's the signature star. We have a dish called Arepa Heaven, where you get 20 pieces of arepas, and it's all the different ones.
But what is it?
So an arepa is traditionally like a corn cake, almost like, it's hard to describe. It's traditionally made with corn, flour, and water, and I actually use fresh corn.
Like cornbread?
Kind of, sort of, but not really. Okay. And I'm going to say that because it's almost the same ingredients, except we're not baking it. You got to make a dough. And then traditionally the dough is griddled or like pan fried. I deep fry mine. So you get that crispy texture. Traditionally an arepa is stuffed. I put all of my toppings on top of it. So, and I make them mini. So you'll have like 4 arepas to an order. My traditional classic one is, we call it the award winner now because that's the one that beat Bobby Flay. It's braised beef short rib, guacamole, pico de gallo, lime scented sour cream, cotija cheese, micro cilantro. So you'll take it, you'll dip it in the sauce, you'll have it in one bite, and it's a party in your mouth. It hits every sense that your palate, it's like sweet, salty, crispy, hot, cold, herbaceous, creamy, umami. You're like, fuck did I just experience? You're like, what was that? I want more.
We're pulling up the last line.
I'm telling you, vibes.
So you mentioned beating Bobby Flay with the dish. Now, I read this, and maybe it's true or not, but prior to that, because you are French trained, and were you doing Latin foods prior to this?
No, I wasn't doing Latin food until I left the Strand Hotel the first time. I got an opportunity to open up a Latin restaurant, and that's how I created the arepas at a restaurant called Blend on the Water. So my goal was to go learn as much as I can about Latin food. I'll tell you 100%, I did not know what I was doing until I started asking my mom, asking my dad, going to, you know, Caracas Arepa Bar, which is like it still is the number one arepa bar downtown in the Lower East Side. They had a line around the door, and I'm like, they must be doing something right. So I had their arepa. I'm big on textures. It was good, but I'm like, how can I make this different, unique, and mine? So we got to the drawing board and created the arepa. The original one that I have now was nowhere near the first one I made. So not everything I make was great. So things take time, things take practice. And let's just say
perfection takes time.
Well said.
So you're J-Lo and A-Rod's personal show. How did that come about?
Shout out to Juval. This beautiful lady was a fan of mine. 5 years ago, she came to one of my events. I did a pop-up event in Brooklyn. There was a restaurant called SDQ. It was also like a lounge. And she came to my event, and I treated her the way I treat everybody. Like, I know you for 10 years, and you say hi to me, I'm going to give you a hug. If you show me pictures from last birthdays that you came to celebrate with me, that makes me even more special. So I treated her like I treat everybody. We have a conversation. We'll talk about it. What made you come here? Have you had my food before? 5 years later, fast forward, she's J-Lo's personal assistant. And an opportunity presented itself where the chef that they've had for 10 years couldn't do Thanksgiving weekend. And she's like, I know this chef. I don't know him personally, but I've had his food. He's great with kids. He's great with blah, 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 this, that. Opportunity came, presented itself. I hit a home run. And let's say for A-Rod, I hit a grand slam. And since then... they hit me up for every time they need something, whether it's a birthday party for their kids, whether it's Memorial Day in the Hamptons, whether it's Christmas in Miami, which I'm going in a couple weeks, and then New Year's Eve in LA. I'm blessed to say that anywhere they need me, I go.
You know, a personal chef is actually a good investment, something that I'm going to look into in the new year.
because I know a guy.
it's like I always said, like a personal trainer Absolutely. And a personal chef. Those are good investments.
100%.
I have 2.
You're investing in your mind.
I got 2.
You have what? 2?
Yeah, personal chefs.
You have 2 personal chefs? Talking about his wife. Yeah. His wife.
Oh. I was like, well.
Well, that's a good investment.
You're focusing.
I might be investing.
You're investing in your mind, body, and soul.
Shotty, better say that. You better say that, man.
Yeah, for sure. Nah, especially because it's like when you're on a run a lot, you can't cook. Like, you don't have time to cook. Especially, you got dietary restrictions. I'm trying to go vegan. So it's God like.
Stop dating a girl because she was vegan. Yo, it's tough. I'm a chef, man. I'll be 100%, and I try.
You could be a vegan chef,
but I can be a vegan chef, but I can't be a vegan chef. I can't be a vegan chef, and I tried it. Like, we dated a couple years ago, went on a couple dates, and I was vegan when I took some of the best Michelin star restaurants that were vegan. And I'm like, where's the fucking steak? I need steak. Oh my god! And then yo, I would take her home. And I'll go get a burger or something. And I'm like, yo, this is crazy. I'm eating twice. I'm spending double the money. It's not going to work out. It's just not going to work out. It's just not going to work out. And I laugh about it now.
Yo, why take you so long to get home? Ah, man, not traffic.
No, traffic.
I stopped at Burger King.
No, shout out to you. That's not easy. And like, nah. I have some vegan friends that hold me to it. And like, even doing this event on the 19th and the 20th, I had to put a vegetarian menu because I know so many people that support Grizel and support her are all vegetarians and vegans, so I got to make sure that offers.
And that's another lane too, especially like there's so many athletes and entertainers,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just, you know, high level business people that like personal chefs is like a whole another lane.
It's definitely a world in its own, but it takes a special type of person to do that because at the end of the day, you sacrifice your entire life. Not alone just to cooking, to the person that you're working with, then, because they're requiring, their needs are a lot different than any other cook, chef.
You're like their beck and call.
Yeah, at all times. And that's why when I decided to do personal chefing, I had my own requirements and restrictions. And it's like, one, I would never stay at the person's house. I would need my own hotel because I tried it once. And no matter what, I'm staying in a $20 million house. I can't sleep in a bed knowing that I work downstairs. Or imagine, I always joke around, imagine I'm hungry and I'm gonna go make a grilled cheese sandwich at 1 o'clock in the morning and somebody says, can you make me one too? Fucking kitchen is closed, man. Like, you know, I would make it gladly.
Did you hear about
but that's just something I always joke around with.
Did you hear about Diddy's story with his personal chef?
No, I didn't hear Diddy's story. I can imagine Diddy's story.
We'll tell you off
camera. It got crazy. Can we talk about the branding? Because obviously you've done an amazing job on social media doing that, and it's led to some deals with Infinity and Wells Fargo.
Blessings on blessings. And again, these are things that I tell people. They're always asking me, how did you get so many followers? How did you do this? And I was like, I am giving you what I'm saying I'm giving you. So if I'm a chef page, I'm going to give you food. I'm going to give you things that are related to chefs. I'm going to give you some tips. I'm going to give you some recipes. I'm going to not be afraid. The only thing I'm not going to give you is my coquito recipe and my arepa recipe. So guys, I love you to death. Just stop asking. Anything that I make money on, I can't give you. But again, it's one of those things where you have to stay true to what you're trying to sell, what you're trying to do, and who you're trying to be. So I am Chef Kelvin. My Instagram is Chef Kelvin. And I'm going to give you everything that has to do with food. Instagram stories are a little bit different. You can get a little bit more personal. You can show traveling. You can show family. You can show friends. But at the end of the day, I'm giving you what I promised that I was going to give you. You have to stay consistent. And at the end of the day, you have to make sure that what you put on your feed is true to you. And you can't be afraid to post because you're not going to get a lot of likes. So I'm actually a little bit happy with the whole, you know, removing likes. Because at the end of the day, you'll know still that someone is getting a lot of insights and a lot of people coming to them when the comments are there, because you can tell when someone has a real $50,000 following and someone has a bought $50,000 following. You can have 10,000 likes, but if you have two comments, something's wrong.
Engagement's
completely off. Yeah. You know, because if I post something and I'm gonna get 1,000 likes, I'm gonna get 100 comments.
And it's that's something I learned early on as far as social media. A friend of mine told me that you should be able to look at somebody's page without reading their bio and know what they do.
100% agree.
Without reading
in
their bio.
In your bio, it should say everything that you do and you can't say everything because then my characters would run out right away. But you would have to say in your bio, you would say who you are, what you do, and
but I'm saying they should be able to tell without reading your bio.
Absolutely agree.
So it's like a lot of times people do all kinds of random nonsense, pictures and memes, and it's like,
what's happening?
What are we here for?
What's going on?
The message is confused.
I'm confused. Correct. I'm confused.
If it's there for fun, then cool.
Yeah.
But if it's for business, you can't do that.
You can't. You got to sacrifice that. And this page is like a reflection of like how people are going to look at your business.
I like the way you said that. Without reading your bio, you should be able to tell just by looking at the pictures. See, I learned that. I even tried doing like a personal page, and that didn't work because I have no time to let alone post on one page. This is your personal life. Yeah, this is my personal life. My life is food. Yeah. So stop with the personal stuff. If you know me on a personal level, you know that you get the same guy that you get as the chef level, you know. But building that brand, you have to learn that it takes time. You have to be patient.
Yeah.
You can't rush for the likes. And I know that now because I just started YouTube and I'm hitting up one of my friends who has been an expert on YouTube and she's done multiple videos and I'm reaching out to her. I'm like, but if I put it on Instagram, I'll get 50,000 likes. But if I put it on YouTube, I only have 1,000 likes. She says, you have to wait. You have to be patient.
Yeah.
And I learned, and I'm like, we're not patient in this world. We don't even read in this world. And I learned that because I get my car told on a regular basis. and I can't get mad at clients. I'm being dead honest. I'm like, oh, can I park here? It's like 6 signs. Yes, yes, yes. Okay, I forgot the last one. And I get mad at clients when I'll give you all the information. Like, for example, to purchase my Coquito, you got to send an email to coquitosbychefkelvin@gmail.com. You say hello, you can say all the information you want. You're gonna automatically get a response that says, thank you for your inquiry. Here's the product. Here's how much it costs. Here's the size of the bottle. Here's how we can deliver. Here's forms of payment. Everything that you can ever ask me. First question, how much is the bottle?
How much?
Yeah. That happens all the time.
All the information you need is in the last email. And you have to be patient. So you have to be patient in all sides of life. So even now that, you know, 10 years, 15 years, I'm going to say now, when I turn 35 in July, I'm going to be cooking for 20 years. So building this brand for 20 years, everything that I've wanted is happening right now at this moment. Brand deals with Infinity. You know, I have an awesome commercial that's coming out where I'm honored to know that Infinity, that luxury brand, wants to follow me around for a day and tell my story. And it's going to be an awesome commercial. Can't wait to share that. You know, I'm a chef and, you know, with the Institute of Culinary Education, even though that's not my alma mater, I am so happy to be with them. They give me an opportunity to tell my story on blog posts, to use their kitchen for YouTube shows, for if I want to shoot a book, if I want to just come in and prep for an event.
So,
I'm grateful for people like that, that believe in me, believe in the brand, and help me take my career to a level that I wouldn't have imagined doing. So I think it's important. And as you mentioned, you know, companies like Wells Fargo to see my Instagram page and say, you know, we want to partner up and collab with this guy because what he's doing is positive.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that he can be the right guy that will share our message. And I'm always smiling. So I have, like people say I have a $1 million smile.
Yeah.
It comes with making people happy.
It is.
Chef Calvin, man, we want to thank you for coming. Appreciate it. Anything you want to tell the people, your Instagram, your social media, anything you got coming up?
Absolutely, like, man. I appreciate you guys for having me, letting me tell my story on a whole different platform because I'm able to tell people my story and inspire. So I always say if I can inspire one person from one thing that I do per day, my job is done. Most important thing is if I can offer some people advice that want to become a young entrepreneur is back to what I said. Surround yourself by greatness. Don't be afraid of not making a lot of money now. Don't chase the money. The money will come chasing you. I'm at a point in my career where I can greatly say that I'm turning down gigs because there's just so many things coming in. So as the team expands, I'm looking forward to growing my YouTube show, starting my cookbook in January. And
cookbook summer?
Cookbook, yeah.
Dope.
That's number one thing. It's cookbook and cooking classes. So I'm going to try to get back on the cooking classes, looking for a venue. All my social media is Chef Kelvin, Chefkelvin. Don't look at my page after midnight. You're only going to make yourself hungry. In advance. But thank you guys for having me.
Appreciate you, man. Troy, housekeeping items?
Yeah, shout out to everybody on patreon.com. Y'all know that's our Proud to Pay program. The support on that has been tremendous, man. And it's beautiful. We got to actually get to speak and engage with some of our patrons, and the list keeps growing. So shout out to everybody that's supporting that. You know that if you are a tier 4 or 5 member, you are access to Earn Your Leisure University, which is our online school. Rashad's wearing the merch. Shout out to everybody. Hey. Yo, the merch has been moving like crazy, man.
We started
like
our own school.
We put up the merch and the sales were out the door, man, the first day. So shout out to everybody that's purchased the merch. Yeah, man, you want to talk about Earn Your Leisure University?
Yeah, Earn Your Leisure University, we about to actually do a class like right now.
He's not joking.
It's three classes every single week. We do a real estate class on Monday. We do a floating class on Wednesday. Me and Troy do a class every Thursday. And starting in the new year, we're going to have EYL Espanol.
Yeah, for sure.
So, you know, we it's interactive, it's Zoom. You get to ask questions. It's really dope. It's a really dope experience. And yeah, don't forget Atlanta VIP experience. We are coming January 25th and 26th. It's gonna be crazy. Live podcast, networking event, open bar, dinner, and then we're gonna have a workshop the next day. Our alumni is gonna be there. We're gonna be there. It's gonna be a whole vibe. So, events tab on our website, earnyourleisure.com.
Don't play yourself.
Nah.
For real.
Come on, Atlanta. We can't wait to touch the town for sure. And the book tip of this week is Kitchen Confidential by the late, great Anthony Bourdain.
Rest in peace.
For sure. So I thought that would be fitting. Chef recommended that book himself.
So he's read it four times.
Yeah. So that's it. Thank you guys for rocking with us. We'll see you next week. Peace.
Peace.